Previously, on part one of Todd and Preston's Drive Time Chat number 5.
The podcast that after 150 episodes struggles with Zencaster, microphones, and or headsets every freaking time.
But as it stands right now, and I'm sure you can tell in the recording, I am currently having my own issues.
You sound like you're wrapped up in a blanket and rolling down a hill.
The Super Bowl recently happened. Taylor Swift won.
Who's Taylor Swift?
To the eternal torture of one Mr. Donald J. Trump.
I don't know anything about what you're even talking about.
I know words.
Bing, bing,
bong, bong, bing, bing, bing.
God bless the United States.
I knew you were trouble when you walked in.
And with the Super Bowl comes commercials.
The first one on my list is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
I'm looking forward to this. You know, Janine's going to be a Ghostbuster now.
Yeah, it will be good to see him back in New York. It's going to have a whole lot of characters. I just hope it won't be overloaded.
I believe there's going to be a new Slimer in this one. One episode that sticks out from the animated show is the one where they bust the ghost from A Christmas Story and inadvertently kills Christmas.
Xmas marks the spot.
It was
by J. Michael Straczynski, creator of Babylon 5.
Already 10 minutes in the episode, we have a Babylon 5 reference.
So predictable and stupid.
The Deadpool 3 trailer. You know, sort of wackiness that the Marvel Universe needs.
I don't know if anybody knew that it was going to be called Deadpool and Wolverine. Might have been a surprise for everybody. Godzilla X King Kong, the new empire. King Kong having a robotic gauntlet. That seems a little bit weird.
This is wrestling now. I'm interested. I went and saw the new Wonka movie.
It's a musical.
And it's fun. This is Wonka before he gets the factory. The 70s Wonka. All of the kids that are not Charlie are dead. The weird satanic panic of the 80s. All of the televangelists said that Dungeons & Dragons was going to turn your kids into Satanists.
Like it's the fruits of the devil. Evil.
The newest season of Fargo. And they have to explore their trauma using puppets that they carve themselves.
I will watch reactions on YouTube. The name of her channel is Popcorn in Bed.
Red Litter Media. You know, best of worst. Spotlight.
The new Quantum Leap revival. They just recently had their two-part season finale. The very last twist that happens in the last minute or two of the second episode, I clapped afterwards. Season 6 premiering tonight, and I was like, holy crap, the rookie is back.
I'm an adult now, and I'm gonna watch a cop show.
Arrest me, but make it sexy.
And now, the conclusion.
You know, I'll be honest, the first couple of seasons of NCIS, I really enjoyed. I think they still hold up as a show. I don't think it needed to go on as long as it did. I feel like that's the ultimate downfall of NCIS, is that it went on too long. And it got formulaic, and it's just kind of a thing now. I don't even watch it anymore.
Yeah, some of those shows have something like, what, 10, 15 seasons?
I think they're up to 20.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, and the main NCIS... Didn't it get canceled, but then is coming back again? Or did that already happen?
No. NCIS has always been one of the biggest shows on... NCIS is a spinoff of the show JAG, believe it or not. JAG is the one that got canceled, and it might be coming back. No, JAG is the show that started NCIS, and it's over now.
Oh, yeah, and it's been over for years. JAG is kind of an old show, and I do remember watching that for a while. I think it might have come on the USA Network, and I kind of enjoyed that. NCIS, I could have sworn that it was either the core show or one of the spinoffs that was canceled, and then I thought I heard it was uncanceled. And I don't know if that stuck and it stayed, or if it came back for another season, and everybody's like, nah, it's not as good as it was before, and it got canceled again. I'm not sure.
Well, so there have been several spinoffs of NCIS at this point. There was NCIS LA, and I believe that was the one that got canceled and came back.
Okay.
And then there was NCIS New Orleans, and I believe that got canceled as well. That did have Scott Bakula in it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for Bakula, he might be down in New Orleans. We don't know. Okay. Now there's NCIS Hawaii, I believe, or Honolulu, one of those.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But yeah, it's one of those. We have all this set up in Hawaii from when we were shooting. What was it? The revamp of Dragnet, or the revamp of Magnum PI. Magnum P.I., if you've never seen Magnum P.I., that's a good show. It just goes on too long. there's one big mystery in Magnum PI and they solve it. And after they solve it, they should have just stopped. But they kept going for like 4 or 5 more years.
It should have been a movie instead of a TV show.
I wouldn't say it should have been a movie instead of a TV show, but there is one central event that carries Magnum through, and then he gets a resolution on that. And they really should have ended the show after he had that resolution.
Now, are you talking about the original or the new one?
The original. Okay. I haven't seen the new one. I haven't seen too much of the new one, I should say. I did see a couple episodes of the new one, and I saw where they were going with it. You know, it's one of those will they, won't they kind of things where they took the character Higgins, and Higgins in the original show was a dumpy British man that hated Magnum having fun. So he was like a comedic foil. Well, they took Higgins and they made him a beautiful British woman.
Yeah.
Who was always going to end up being the love interest of the program. Like, the woman was so much more stunningly beautiful than anyone else in the cast.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh, yeah, she's going to be the love interest of the show. But, yeah, no, it was a strange decision. Much like the MacGyver reboot. Had a bunch of strange decisions.
Really? Yeah, I don't think I ever saw that. I did watch the Hawaii Five-O remake for at least a little while, like a season or two. And I did, if for no other reason than because of the casting, because the main lead, he was in The Shield, another cop show, for one season. And he was also in the CBS vampire show Moonlight, which was pretty good. He was the lead in that. And so then he was cast as the lead of Hawaii Five-O, but they also had one of the actors, Daniel Day-Kim, from both Lost and Crusade, which is the spinoff of Babylon 5. They also had one of the actresses from Battlestar Galactica and maybe one or two other people that had been in other. Oh, I think one of the guys from Ocean's 13 or all three Ocean's movies. And then one or two other people from either sci-fi shows or movies that I really like. And so I was watching it mostly for the casting. I think I kind of dropped off of it eventually. But one of the things that really impressed me were the stunts in that. I don't know if they were true physical stunts or a combination of that and special effects, but they were pulling off some pretty impressive stunts in that first season or two.
They did good work. You know, there's a lot of great stunt work in all these shows nowadays. Which is really the reason why I think nothing registers anymore. Like, the death of the action movie, or at least the death of the traditional action movie, can often be placed on the growing abilities in the TV space. Because, you know, if you've ever seen Bullet, the movie Bullet, it has one of the best car chase scenes in the history of film. But if you watch that today with all of the, stunt work that we have now, and you'll see car chases like that on television. The TV car chases are so much better, so much more complex. But that's because of what they were able to accomplish in Bullet and how they were able to time everything and film it in the car, out of the car, underneath the driver, and make sure everything looks great. But a lot of the improvements in your run-of-the-mill, you know, CBS weeknight programming TV show can be attributed to an increase in budget and just an increase in skill in all facets of content creation.
And sometimes the cars can be CGI and you don't even know it.
Oh, yeah, no. Cars are surprisingly easy to fake.
Yeah.
Still, the hardest thing to render using technology are human faces and eyes.
Yeah.
And we're getting closer by the day.
And talking about stunts, you know, we were talking about Super Bowl previews. I think one thing that premiered at the Super Bowl was the Fall Guy trailer. And I'm not even sure I knew that was going to be a thing, but I vaguely remember watching a TV show called The Fall Guy as a kid.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah.
And I think I was so young, I didn't even know what it was about. All I cared about was that he had a big truck with big tires. It was the 80s. And one thing that was very emblematic of the 80s were either big trucks, special cars, helicopters, you know, a lot of the shows that appealed to kids in the 80s had some kind of special vehicle in it. And so the Fall Guy had this very distinctive truck. And I even had the Matchbox car version of his truck. But apparently it was about a guy who was a stuntman and he moonlighted at night as a bounty hunter.
I've been on fire with Sally Field, gone past with a girl named Bo.
But apparently this preview for the movie that's coming out is more of a comedy, which I don't know if that's a good idea or not. And I don't know why they have to take all these concepts from the 80s and then turn them into comedies.
It's a death-defying life I lead. I take my chances. I die for living in the movies and TV.
The 80s might have been a different time, but it doesn't mean it was goofy enough that everything has to be a comedy now. But anyway, I think it might have Ryan Gosling, if I remember correctly. And there's some kind of gimmick, I can't remember what that gimmick is, where he is a stuntman or he's having to pretend to be a stuntman, but he's having to do multiple stunts in multiple movies.
I might fall from a tall building, I might roll a brand new car, cause I'm the unknown stuntman that made Redford such a star.
And it's to achieve some kind of goal. Like, I don't know if he's been recruited by somebody. And in order to achieve some kind of mission, he's got to do all these stunts. I can't remember. I might have to watch the preview again to remember what the gimmick is.
I've gotten burned over Cheryl Teagues, blown up for Rocky Welch.
But it's supposed to be this thing where maybe he's not totally qualified to do all these stunts and all these different TV shows and movies that he's in, and he's being forced to do it. I don't know.
I might jump an open drawbridge or Tarzan from a vine, cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine.
So maybe that might be good. Maybe it might be funny. I don't know. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Todd said he watched the trailer again. Apparently, Ryan Gosling's stuntman character doubles for a movie production's lead star, both on camera and behind the scenes, when the star goes missing and is possibly killed because he was mixed up with bad people. Todd said the movie might have a truck, similar to the one in the 1980s Fall Guy TV show, so that's a plus, except the trailer also makes it look like that truck gets wrecked. The movie has Emily Blunt in it, so personally, there's a 200% chance I'll be seeing that one. Because this is the first time, since Dinosaurs Walked the Earth, that an MCU movie won't be premiering on or right before the first weekend in May, The Fall Guy snatched up the May 3rd release date. In case you're thinking that would be the date for Deadpool and Wolverine, that's coming July 26th.
You know what I think you should watch is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's a Tarantino picture, so it might be a little too violent for you. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's about this Western actor played by Leonardo DiCaprio and his stuntman played by Brad Pitt. And Leonardo DiCaprio is down on his luck. You know, he's being typecast in all these Western TV shows. He's not really getting any good movie roles anymore. And the producer that he's working with wants to send him out to Italy to do spaghetti Westerns. And he doesn't really want to do it. But throughout all that, somehow they end up living next door to Shannon Tate and Roman Polanski. And if you know anything about Shannon Tate and Roman Polanski, that's probably one of the most horrific stories of Hollywood in the 60s with the Manson family. It ends up that Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio end up stopping the Manson family from murdering Shannon Tate, thus saving Hollywood from its darkest story, you know, in its formative years. But it's a fun picture. It might be a little violent for you, but I have fun with it. I enjoy Tarantino's work. I enjoy, you know, just how he operates and everything. So, yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It sounds like it might be up your alley.
I don't know.
I mean, it's fair. It's fair. Like, it does get pretty brutal.
Yeah, I went through a phase where I might have been more open-minded to that kind of movie. I'm not sure I would be now because, I mean, there may not be too many similarities, but it just, for some reason, when you mentioned that, it made me think of the movie 2 Days in the Valley, which I did like at one time, and then I think I saw it again when I was older, and I was like, I'm not sure I like it as much as I used to. It's one of those movies that is kind of like what you described, where there's a lot of criminal stuff going on, and it can be kind of violent, and some people are trying to kill each other, like, because I think at least a couple of the characters are assassins or something like that. But I think what appealed to me is it's one of those things almost like, oh, I'm blanking. What is the name of that Christmas movie that I like? Love Actually, where there are lots of characters in different storylines, but then there are overlaps and crossovers in those storylines, and people are related in weird ways that you wouldn't expect. 2 Days in the Valley is kind of like that, if I remember correctly, where, like I said, there are characters that either know each other or are related or cross paths, and all these crazy things are happening. I'm not sure that there's a big point to the movie. I guess that's why it's called 2 Days in the Valley. It's one of those just slice of life type things where a lot of bizarre things happen. I'm not sure it's a total point to it. But it made me think of that. So I don't know whether there are similarities or not.
It's more about Leonardo DiCaprio being, you know, a down on his luck actor, and him, like, the majority of his story is about him finding his place in Hollywood again after being kind of down on his luck and doing well in this one pilot Western filming. And then he lands a spaghetti Western movie deal. And, you know, Tarantino kind of gets to go into all of the reality of what happens or what happened with those spaghetti Westerns. Because if you don't know anything about spaghetti Westerns, then why would you? Spaghetti Westerns were really interesting. They were filmed in Italy, and they would hire whatever actor they could get to come over. And they wouldn't have anyone, like, if... So Clint Eastwood's in a lot of these. And if you ever watch Clint Eastwood in the movie, he's not speaking Italian. He's speaking English, and he's delivering his lines in English. And everyone else in the movie that speaks Italian, they're delivering their lines in Italian.
Oh.
But it's dubbed over for American audiences with an entire English speaking cast. But if you watch it, you can see Clint Eastwood's clearly speaking English. Lee Marvin is clearly speaking English, but the Italian actors and actresses, they're speaking Italian.
Huh. I didn't realize that was an aspect of it.
Yeah. And so that's kind of like a weird little bit of it. But it kind of goes into Leonardo DiCaprio being this struggling actor that realizes he's down in his luck. And you get like a whole scene of him in the dressing room just freaking out that he's been messing up so many takes, forgetting his lines. It's a really interesting kind of character piece. And Brad Pitt gets to play the coolest stuntman that ever lived and get into a fist fight with a guy playing Bruce Lee. So there's that. Yeah, it's a fun time.
Okay. Well, I think we're a little bit over an hour, so we probably need to be getting near our last one or two topics. Did you have anything else that you want to cover?
I'll save one particular topic for another time, maybe, because I feel like if you're getting a little ready to hit the round up on this one, then maybe it wouldn't be a good time to launch into who do you think had the better Navy, Starfleet or the Empire?
Not a lot.
But maybe, you know, what do you think? Do you want to get into that one, or do you want to move on to something else?
Well, I mean, we could, because I'm not sure that would be that long a debate for me, because, hang on. I was about to say that one of those universes doesn't have shields, but I'm wrong. Star Wars has shields. Because that's the thing. If anybody pits like the Star Trek universe up against Babylon 5, okay, well, Babylon 5 doesn't have shields, so those ships are going to get destroyed real fast when ships over in Star Trek can take it because they've got shields. The same thing with Star Wars. So which are better or stronger? I don't even know if I could talk about that very intelligently, because as much as I might enjoy both universes and even some of the technology in it, it's not like I know exactly how much energy is in an energy blast that comes from a ship and just how much a shield on a ship can absorb. And I don't know if anybody knows, and I don't know if anybody cares. I'm sure somebody out there might be picky enough to care, but I'm not in, as much as I'm nitpicky, even I'm not that nitpicky that I get into that kind of minutia. So who could withstand what and who could win in a fight and who's better? I don't know. And even when it comes to which ships are cooler, it kind of depends. There are ships in Star Wars that are cooler than some of the ships in Star Trek, but then there are a few ships in Star Trek that are cooler than some of the ships in Star Wars. It really goes both ways. So for me, it's almost a tie. And therefore, I'm not even sure I could debate it intelligently.
I mean, that is absolutely fair. I feel like this is definitely one of those David Teague topics where, you know, I would come up with this on a car ride to Myrtle Beach, and that would be the entirety of Charlotte to probably Conrad. Oh, just really? He and I going back and forth about, well, you know, you're saying, what about the Empire? But the Empire had standardization. Standardization usually means a loss in quality, which is why the Vader ships were so much better, because Vader cared and Vader took them off to the side, and the 501st was entirely a Vader thing, and that was all in his command ship, and his command ship was top of the line, but you couldn't compare it to the rest of the Mark, whereas Starfleet has much more interchange of technology through the various races and species and planets. So you have Klingon technology working its way into Starfleet technology, which improves it. You have, oh, Todd, what's Quark's races?
Ferengi.
Yeah, the Ferengi are out in the open market, so they're able to get, you know, the best deals for everyone. So you've got all of their logistics experience coming into play here. So you have all these other tiny little details with Starfleet that would theoretically push it over the edge of the Empire's absolute standardization and single-mindedness.
Yeah, and you know, it would also depend on what era you're talking about in Star Trek, because the thing about Star Wars is it's called Star Wars, not Star Peace. There's always a war in Star Wars.
That is correct.
So most of the ships and other technology in Star Wars is built for war, which means they're always going to be tougher. But in Star Trek, yes, the ships have phasers, photon torpedoes, later on quantum torpedoes, stuff like that. But they have it mostly for defense, utility purposes, and if they absolutely have to use them, then yes, for even offensive or war-type purposes. But for the most part, ships in Star Trek aren't about war. I mean, they might be for the Klingons and stuff, but as far as the Federation that, you know, would be the top-of-the-line technology, it's not really meant for war until they don't have a choice, when they get dragged into it. So when the Borg attack halfway through Star Trek The Next Generation, and then when they have to deal with the Dominion a couple seasons into Deep Space Nine, they have no choice but to start toughening up their ships with better shields, better weapons, tougher hull plating, stuff like that. And so they had no choice but to make their ships more warlike. And then as soon as those wars are over, then they might be like, okay, now we can kind of concentrate on exploration again and make our ships more about long-term journeys and sensors and laboratories and stuff like that. So it kind of depends on when in the Star Trek universe you're talking about. If you're talking about right in the middle of the Dominion War, when it's only a few years after being attacked by the Borg, and they've got the Defiant, and it's an experimental ship, and later you realize that there are other Defiant-class ships, and other ships that have come out are also pretty tough, well, then that's the era in which that you know, there might be some ships out there just as tough, if not tougher, than some of the ships in Star Wars. But before that, probably not.
This is the geekiest thing I've ever almost fallen asleep to.
And then also, you were talking about standardization. Even if the ships themselves are tougher in Star Wars, it's probably because of slave labor. And we saw a little bit of that in this series, Andor, which I wasn't that thrilled about. But I mean, that was a semi-interesting little side thing that they did, was showing that they've got, you know, not just robotics, but they also have people being forced to manufacture some of these parts en masse for ships and star bases and stuff like that. But you've got robot droids who are making this stuff, and they're not really putting ingenuity into it.
How rude!
You've got slave labor who they're probably just looking for a chance to kind of sabotage things. Of course, that goes back to Rogue One, where in Star Trek, you've got people who actually care about making this technology the best it can be, not only when the stuff is being manufactured, but then when it's put into use, you've got people who are striving to make it even better and improve on it. The Enterprise in Star Trek The Next Generation, the Enterprise D, started off with, I can't remember, something like a warp 9.2 maximum, but eventually they increased it to 9.6. And why? Because you've got Geordi LaForge, a genius at engineering, who's constantly working at not just keeping the engines maintained, but improving them. And mission after mission, he has no choice but to make them even more efficient, and he does so along the way. So there's also kind of a motivation factor that you would have to put in there. So, you know, where Dave Teague was talking about standardization, add to that the motivation for quality and improvement. And yeah, maybe the Star Trek universe could be tougher than Star Wars.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. You always want to have happy workers when you're building your death machine.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I don't think the Empire really cares about happy workers. They just care about forcing the work.
Yeah. And it's all about the death machine. It's not about making the best death machine.
Yeah.
They had a whole problem with the exhaust on that big Death Star project of theirs. It seems a bit odd.
Yeah.
No, there was another one you wanted to really discuss.
Yeah, and we are running a little bit long, but I think I want to squeeze it in anyway, even if we have to make this a two-parter, because it is kind of related to something that you just brought up. So Dave Shutt bought for me for Christmas the core rule book to Star Trek Adventures, which is the, I want to say new, it's actually been out for something like 5 or 6 years, so it's new to me, the Star Trek Adventures, the role-playing game for the Star Trek universe. And I'm looking over it, and the rules are quite a bit different from D&D, so it's quite a bit used to, and there are lots of complications. I'm going to have to read up some more if I'm ever going to game master this, and I've also never game mastered anything before, so that's going to be a challenge.
Goody! A challenge! This is going to be fun.
But the reason I thought I'd bring up as a topic is I'm wondering, well, first of all, I asked you offline if you would be willing to play, because I thought I better get that out of the way first, and you said that you would be willing to play. But since you're not as familiar with the Star Trek universe, I'm wondering what would make you a happier player? Like, what kind of character would you like to play? What kind of ship would you like to be a part of? What kind of mission would you want to be a part of? What kind of things would make you more interested into the Star Trek universe, or at the very least make it easier to bring you into the Star Trek universe, since it's something that you aren't as familiar with? Do you have any ideas on what might motivate you as a character and as a player?
Three basic archetypes spring to mind. Number one, you could go full on Commander Riker, and just your entire goal in life is to seduce as many women on as many planets as humanly possible.
What's your name? Tell me you love Jazz.
Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
My girl, what's a knockout like you doing in a computer-generated gin joint like this?
And what are you staring at? You've never seen a woman before.
I thought I had.
She appreciates the affection you've shown me.
Is that obvious?
Yes.
What about plain old basic sex? You must have some need for that.
Of course.
He is not very attractive, but I will have him.
They are inquisitive. They would like to know how you would endure.
Endure what?
Them.
One or both?
I may be back for you.
She's serious.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be interesting as a way to kind of explore more of the cultures and all that good stuff. Another one that interests me is just poking around with the Klingons. You know, it's a very brutal kind of society, very Viking-esque.
The Klingons never do anything small, do you?
That might be interesting, just to kind of... Okay, so I've watched a Let's Play of that. There was a full-motion video game about the Klingons way back in the 90s where you got to play as a new recruit on a Klingon vessel, and you went through and you understood that, okay, yes, people do just throw the old, weak, and sickly off of their command stations and take over. You know, that's just how it's done. But later on in the mess hall, you're supposed to like kind of bring him back into the fold by talking about all of his, you know, achievements in battle and what he's been able to do. Even though he was an old man and you did throw him off of his station, he's still a man that you have to respect. So you have to go in and make amends in front of the rest of the crew. So that was an interesting thing. And finally, you know, of course, it's Star Trek. Who doesn't want to be the ultimate Star Trek character, but a Vulcan with massive strength, massive ability, and no sense of humor.
Oh, interesting.
Fascinating.
Now, this particular role-playing game does have an entire core rule book for if you want to play somebody from the Klingon fleet. I think that might be a step too far because, like I said, the mechanics of this role-playing game are a little bit on the complicated side, so I think it might be too much. Plus, I've already bought a couple of the expansions and a couple other books to try to reap on to try to get more into the Star Trek ships and stuff like that. And now that I'm in between jobs, as I mentioned earlier, I really shouldn't be buying more books, especially since some of these are out of print and kind of expensive to find.
Humans make illogical decisions.
Although they do have the PDFs for sale from the company that sells these. But still, I kind of need to save my money right now. So I kind of need to if I'm able to come up with some kind of campaign or mini adventures or something, I kind of need to base it more on the core rules. So when you talk about the Klingons, would you be talking about like the Klingons like teaming up with them as allies or being up against them, or maybe more like playing a Klingon character?
I would imagine it would be like a Worf situation. I'm just on the Starfleet vessel,
yeah,
as a Klingon.
But it sounds like you would consider a Vulcan too.
I would consider a Vulcan. I would consider a Klingon. I would also consider just being I don't know. What's the best way to describe Commander Riker?
I don't know. he's basically your typical hero type character in that he's Starfleet officers go, he's almost like a Captain America, but without the super serum. He's kind of the Boy Scout in the way. I'm still not even sure that's it. That's not the greatest analogy either. I know some people kind of want to equate him to Kirk, and yeah, he does have a bit of a sex drive compared to the other characters, but it's not like he's outright lecherous or anything. But he is he's just that typical suave, yet at the same time, down-to-earth type person who is kind of handsome and, yeah, can have a certain attraction to the ladies, but at the same time can be professional. I'm still not sure I'm describing it very well. I'm not sure I could find a single word to describe him. Yeah, that's what I'm having trouble with, trying to boil him down to just one or two words.
I feel like when you say a single word to describe him, you should go find one of those clips from Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction, and just have Jason Franks cut in and say, that's a fact.
It's fact.
No, I could definitely see what I could do with the Star Trek universe. And again, I might just default to my normal standard and just like let me think of the goofiest character I can possibly think of and put him in the situation.
Well, yeah. And in preparation for this, I also looked at some YouTube channels that try to explain the rules and stuff like that. And I did find one where they actually played the game. And sadly, I think they only did it for about three episodes. And technically, the first episode was almost like their episode zero, where they were really just creating the characters. So they only had two episodes where they actually played the game. And it did help me understand the rules a little bit better. And the thing is, they had fun with it. There was one character that was really goofy. I think he was the counselor. And so there wasn't that much for him to do on the action part of the mission. So what they would do is he would say, okay, is there a little bit of a break in the action? All right, let's have a flashback to a counseling session that I had with this character. And so it's like it wasn't even happening real time. It was just like a flashback to him like giving this counseling session. And he was using a funky voice and just having fun with it. Also, there was a character, I don't know if you'd be familiar with it. Apparently, she's a famous cosplayer, Alicia Marie. She was playing a Vulcan character, but she was also half Romulan. And because she's a cosplayer, she was actually dressed up like a Vulcan. So she had the pointed ears and the pointed eyebrows and stuff like that, and the pointed wig and everything. But her character was still not fully Vulcan because she was half Romulan. She was able to have some emotions too at the same time. And then I think one person was temporarily displaced. So he was either from the future or the past. And then another one was a Ferengi. And so all of them had either this weird quirk about them or a weird voice or something that was just different. So yeah, even though this is Star Trek, I wouldn't want it to be stodgy. And so if you could come up with a fun character, I would prefer that because I would still want the game to be fun. But then following up on a couple of my original questions, what kind of ship might you want? Would you want to be part of a small ship with a small crew, or would you mind a big ship with a big crew, or would that not matter? Would you want a ship with a particular purpose, or one that is just kind of like a all-purpose explorer? Like what kind of missions do you think you might want to do?
I think, you know, the crew size to me wouldn't really matter as much, you know, unless it was one of those things where you had to be very, like, you were going to bring in a lot of characters that, hey, your character knows this character. So, like, if you wanted, like, really, really in-depth, my character is the center of the universe, and everyone in the story is going to know you, and then I imagine a big ship would be a good idea. I feel like being on a more exploratory kind of vessel is more fun. Mm-hmm. Like there's more ability to run into characters and species and kind of give you more creative opportunities to do things. Because again, this is one of those universes that you know very well, and I'm sure there's something in that universe that you really want to show us, or that you really want to kind of go back to, I guess would be the better way.
Yeah, in fact, one of the things I did recently was go through all the episodes of Next Generation. I might do this with Deep Space Nine, too, to see what kind of things were kind of introduced in an episode and then never addressed again. And it might be cool to kind of bring into an adventure or at least, you know, an episode of an adventure or something. And so I'm kind of thinking about that. And I know you mentioned exploration. One of the things I wouldn't want to do is like, oh, here's an anomaly. And some kind of spatial anomaly, and you need to map it or you need to study it. That would be really boring. I feel like everything needs to have some level of either mystery or conflict to it or threat or something like that. And that's going to be the tough part because I'm not the best at coming up with stories. I make a much better critic and a much better editor than I do a writer of something from scratch. So that's going to be the challenge. And I know that I could probably just use like some pre-written adventure. The thing is that because I'm also not used to game mastering, if I'm making it up on my own, I feel like I have more control over it. But if I'm using a pre-written adventure, what if you guys go on some kind of tangent? It's like, well, I'm totally off script now. Everything I prepared for from this pre-written script Doesn't even matter. That's why I think I feel like if I need to improvise, I just need to improvise at everything, or not necessarily improvise at everything, but I need to improvise within things that I come up with on my own, which is why I feel like I almost have to homebrew it.
Well, remember, I recommended something when we last talked about it, about, you know, 6 months to, you know, whenever it was, you were expressing those same kind of concerns. And I said, well, what about a Ferengi buys a bunch of love motels on the Vulcan home planet, because, you know, he saw the traffic during Pon Farr and was like, oh yeah, I'll make the money back in no time. But, you know, Pon Farr only happens within, you know, every 8 to 10 years or whatever it is. I don't know exact, but it only happens, you know, every X amount of years. So he's underwater on all these things. So he really needs to offload these love hotels, and the Federation needs something from the Ferengi. But this guy says, you've got to take on this debt for the love hotels. You know, so what do you do to kind of A, get the Federation out of it and make the Ferengi happy and somehow convince the Vulcans that they need these love hotels?
I don't know if Pon Farr really requires love hotels.
I just find that image hilarious.
Yeah.
But like this Ferengi out in front of this love hotel trying to convince these Vulcans to come in.
But even without Pon Farr, the TV show Strange New Worlds would have you believe that the Vulcans still need some place. And who knows? Yeah, maybe they do still have love hotels even without Pon Farr. I don't know. I'll try to keep some of that in mind as I try to figure out some kind of story. I've already got like little bits and pieces of an idea, but unfortunately, that's the way my brain works when it comes to come up with the story. I never come up with the story. I come up with the bits and pieces, like the little details, and it's the connective tissue that I don't quite get. So I'm going to have to plot some things out.
Just what it just jumped into my head as we were talking is just like, what if I'm one of Kurt's many love children? And my whole goal is to just go around the galaxy and meet my other siblings.
Do you mind telling me what this is all about, mister?
You are the father of Miss Thompson's child.
You are the father of Jane and Michael Banks, are you not?
You are the father of two daughters.
You are the father of my children.
Father of at least one of my children?
Are you my daddy?
Kirk, to bridge. Get out fast and go to maximum war.
Oh, wow. Greetings, discerning listeners. This is Todd the Editor cutting in briefly, maybe? First, I'm sorry for getting part two of this Drive Time edition out so late. Even with me having lots of free time on my hands, I'm still somehow finding ways of procrastinating. But one thing that distracted me a little lately is actually relevant to something Preston was joking about in the recording. I don't remember why, but somehow I stumbled upon some fan-made Star Trek films on YouTube, including the 11 episodes of Star Trek Continues, which has been out for several years. In fact, the first episode of Star Trek Continues premiered in May 2013 at Phoenix Comic Con, which I just happened to be at.
Nobody really cares.
I vaguely remember reading something about it in the schedule, but I didn't attend that, at least partially because I was focused on the events related to the singular reason I was there, the 20th anniversary of, you guessed it, Babylon 5.
Get on with it!
Anyway, I recently binge-watched all 11 episodes of Star Trek Continues, and one whole episode is about Captain Kirk having hallucinations about various women he has had very strong feelings for in the past. I'm not an expert on Star Trek the original series, so one or two of the women might have been made up just for this fan-written show, but I'm pretty sure that one or two others were based on guest characters from actual Star Trek episodes. Most or all of the women he hallucinated about were ones that either died or that he had to leave behind to continue with his job. Part of the point of the episode was the guilt he felt over what happened to the women, and there's even a nice moment of dialogue between Spock and Bones at the end of the episode that imply a genuine emotional effect that the lack of a personal life may have had on the captain. It was a well-written premise that gives me a whole new perspective on Kirk. When he earned the possibly exaggerated trope of hooking up with women everywhere the ship goes, it's not because he's a horn dog. He's had to sacrifice the opportunity to have a family, and he's just wishing for some companionship, even if just for a little while. Maybe I'll get a chance to talk more about Star Trek Continues in a future episode, or maybe I'll write about it in our new Discord chat server, which you can check out now. But I'd say I really respect the 11 episodes of this web series. It is surprisingly well written, well directed, and well produced, including lighting, cinematography, special effects, music, and casting. I've occasionally hinted, as tactfully as I can, that I'm displeased with the direction of modern Star Trek. It would take too long to list all of my issues, but I think the newest shows lack substance and are sometimes silly, mess with established canon, didn't feature their support characters very well, and just generally make bad decisions about storytelling. Ironically, what are some of the best strengths of the Star Trek Continues web series? It has some meaningful and sometimes allegorical storytelling, it respects canon, it features its support characters well, and it just generally demonstrates good decision making. I can't remember if the two seasons of Star Trek the Animated Series from the 1970s are considered canon or not. I haven't watched them since I was a kid. But in my own head, Star Trek Continues is worthy of counting as the official conclusion to Kirk's original five-year mission. If you like what Rogue One did for Star Wars and how it served as connective tissue to A New Hope, I think you'll respect how the two-part finale of Star Trek Continues both bookends itself to the TOS second pilot episode and bridges the gap between the TV series and Star Trek the Motion Picture. So see, I'm not a grump every week. I championed the cop show The Rookie in part one of this drive time, and now I'm fully endorsing a Star Trek web series. How consistent will that goodwill be in the next few episodes? Well, stay tuned to find out. Okay, back to the recording. Well, and actually, oh, that reminds me of something else. So you were talking a while ago about side characters and stuff like that and the size of the crew. Another mechanic that's built into Star Trek Adventures is being able to play secondary characters. So you've got your main player characters, but if there's a particular piece of the adventure where for some reason that character isn't that useful, like let's say you're the chief medical officer, but there's no medical emergency going on, then you can play a secondary character, and maybe that secondary character could be doing something. And it could be something where that person is a lower rank, or maybe isn't in Starfleet at all. Maybe, you know, they're on the ship, but they're a civilian and they're doing something a little bit more on the mundane side. It gives you a chance to do at least something else. So it could be that, you know, you had three different ideas for a character. It could be that you could play two of those, or maybe in all three of those. It's just only one of them might be your primary character.
But, and that's fair. That's absolutely fair. Any good RPG session needs to have players that are willing to play whoever they're given. You know, if you need me to play like eight characters, I'm sure I could figure it out. I think that might stretch me a little thin, but I think I could at least do four.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I could figure that out.
Yeah, and I don't know if it would require you to play that many, but that sounds almost like one time we played Ars Magica, and it's a covenant of magic users, but you can have companions and grogs. And Dave Teague and I think, created something like 20, 30 characters each for this covenant. Yeah, and they all had names, stats, backgrounds, everything.
Oh, that sounds like me in Vampire the Masquerade. Like I have one vampire, and then he has seven different characters underneath him, and they all have characters underneath them, and they're all connected to this larger world, and like it gets deep like that.
Yeah, well, we've gone almost 2 hours. We're like an hour and 45 minutes now, so we probably should wrap up. So as usual, seek us out on social media, which we continue to not do that great a job at, but with me being in between jobs, I've got all the time in the world other than job searching, so who knows, maybe I'll be able to get better at that. I've talked a little bit about maybe starting a Discord channel. Maybe that might work out better than Facebook and or Twitter/X.
Todd has done that now. Just search for Discerning Geeks Portal on Discord.
But we are technically out there. And if nothing else, you can send us an email at discerninggeeks@gmail.com. I think I've had trouble getting into that account a time or two recently, but I know Dave does check it every once in a while. So yeah, send us a message there and let us know what kind of topics you want us to talk about. Because obviously, just improvising, Preston and I can come up with several topics for almost 2 hours, but maybe you want us to pick a particular direction. And just keep in mind that in some of our upcoming episodes, when Dave and or Andrew are also able to join us, we'll be diving back into some movie reviews. We've still got a TV topic. We still got a knockout from months ago. Let me see what else is coming. I still got to create the rules for the 48-minute film project that we randomly rolled. We do have a couple of movie reviews and maybe one or two other topics that I'm forgetting about, but we've still got more stuff coming, so stay tuned for all that. Preston, thank you very much for joining me tonight for another kind of improvised episode that we call Drive Time, because as you said, it's the type of thing that we would discuss in a car if we were driving to the beach or to Asheville or something like that.
Yes, which we ought to do sometime, just, you know, go somewhere.
Yeah, maybe I can have a vacation now. I've been thinking about that too, maybe trying to get away for a weekend sometime. Folks, let us know what you would like to hear from us. And as always, be well, be safe, and continue to enjoy whatever makes you a discerning geek.
Salutations.
And may the force be with you.
Always.